Listen to the voices of our world.
Once you try to subdue somebody through violence, you are actually subduing that person through fear.
Whenever there is fragmentation and instability, people revert back to their original sectarian beliefs, and it comes out us versus them, and that's what's happening in certain parts of the Muslim world.
We need to show the world that we can also be a superpower in terms of our morals. That's when the real test begins.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. In the immediate aftermath of September 11th, America had a unique opportunity to lead the world towards an era of peace, equality, and understanding. The tragic events of that day could have served as the impetus to unite the human race in the struggle against injustice and extremism. Yet sadly, this opportunity was quickly squandered as the Bush administration chose to pursue a unilateral war based on fear, revenge, and distrust. Ironically, the very same beliefs that motivated the enemy who attacked us on September 11th. This us-against-them philosophy has led to an increasingly large schism between the West and the Arab world, making the world a more dangerous place for both sides and drowning out all attempts at mutual dialogue and understanding. As this conflict persists, the need for moderate voices to stand up and be heard is more acute than ever. Today we are pleased to have two of these much-needed moderate voices with us, former Pakistani ambassador to the UN, S. Azmat Hassan, and Arun Gandhi of the Gandhi Institute. Extremists thrive where discussion and debate are stifled. They use ignorance and confusion to fuel their radical agenda and to justify violence. Recently, the Arab world in particular has been accused of being held captive by these extreme religious ideologues. Judging from the violent reaction to the cartoons of Muhammad, to the sectarian strife in Iraq, to the riots by Muslim youth in France, the Islamic world may appear particularly susceptible to the teachings of radical mullahs, imams, and clerics. But do these religious leaders really reflect the average Muslim or Arab? How do the mainstream Muslims feel about the Western perception that their religion is inherently violent? Is this reputation deserved? Or is it a product of botched Western intrusion into the Arab world? Mary Knoll's director of media relations, Howard Schwartz, talks with the former Pakistani ambassador to the UN, S. Azmat Hassan, to discuss the true feelings of the often unheard moderate Muslims, and to explore how misguided Western foreign policy has sown the seeds of radicalism and violence in the Arab world.
Hello, Ambassador Hassan. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Would you agree that there's a terrible misunderstanding, or shall we say ignorance, in the Western world about Islam?
Well, Islam was not really on the Western radar till the last 30 years or so ago. Of course, now there is a large Muslim population in Europe. About 25, 30 million Muslims live there. About 6 to 8 million Muslims live in the United States. So, yes, there was not much knowledge. There was not much need, perhaps. It was supposed to be an exotic religion practiced somewhere in the Middle East or in Asia. But now I think this gap really needs to be filled up and bridged, because there really is a lot of misunderstanding and ignorance about Islam.
Let's begin with the infamous Danish cartoons, which depict the Prophet Muhammad in, to say the least, an unflattering light. Now, some commentators say the cartoons actually caricature the real issues presented by the rise of fundamentalist Islam. How do you feel about that?
The cartoons and fundamental Islamic fundamentalism, so-called, are two separate issues. And I think the problem with the cartoons was that it tried to show to the public, to the lay public, people who may not be so well-versed about Islamic history, that Islam is a terrorist religion. And this is what the Danish Muslim community, there are 250,000 Muslims in Denmark, out of a population of about 5 or 6 million, They tried to protest and they tried to show that the feelings of Muslims have been hurt last September, but they didn't get anywhere. And this is how the protests snowballed.
Now, have the protests been representative of the feeling of mainstream Muslims?
Well, mainstream Muslims did feel very unhappy. There were two emotions, really. One was that this was an insult to the Prophet, who's greatly revered in Islam. He's considered insan-e-kamil, which means the perfect embodiment of a man. So to show him in that light with a bomb coming out of his turban, I think was deeply insulting to Muslims. No matter of what hue, you can call them fundamentalist, conservative, liberal, non-practicing, whatever you want to say. So yes, there was this feeling of hurt across the Islamic world. But I think a large majority of Muslims did not want the protests to become violent. You know, there are other ways of protesting, peaceful ways. And I think the same message could have been conveyed perhaps in a much better way. So the fact that the protests became violent, I think, was distasteful, and that led to this gulf, which appears to be present today between Denmark, at least, and some Westerners, and the Islamic world.
May I sidestep for a moment and ask you the question? From my understanding, I've read parts of the Quran. Islam is not a violent religion. The Quran does not preach violence in the same way that we've heard some voices of Islam represented. Is that a fair characterization?
I think this impression that Islam is a violent religion really is unfounded. And this goes back to the rise of Islam, where when Islam spread, there were some battles. And for the losing side, they said, well, this is a very violent religion. You know, they've conquered us. But if you look at human history, conquests of one group by another group is very much part of history.
This is Voices of Our World. If you're just joining us, we are speaking with the former Pakistani ambassador to the UN, S. Azmat Hassan. It is much too simplistic to portray the so-called war on terror as a war between two religious ideologies. By taking such a view, concepts like diversity, dignity, and tolerance are overlooked in the name of religious zealotry and purported piety. But instead of dwelling on our differences, what if we were to focus on our shared humanity, the quest for equality and fairness, and our right to be respected? These are not qualities exclusive to any one religion or society. These are qualities essential to the human experience. Only by stressing these shared qualities and common desires can we hope to drain the swamp of bigotry, fear, and misunderstanding in which the extremists wallow. We continue our discussion with S. Azmat Hassan.
One can observe that what's different in this era is Muslim against Muslim violence, such as Sunnis and Shiites attacking each other's holy shrines in Iraq, for example. What are the moderate Islamic voices, or at least where are the moderate Islamic voices who would say enough is enough?
Yes, sectarianism does erupt from time to time. And in my view, there is a direct correlation between instability and the rise of sectarianism. Now, we know that Iraq had a Shia majority and a Sunni majority. A Sunni majority had been ruling since 1920 when the British formed this country. But there were very few sectarian riots. I have lived in Syria, which also has a Sunni-Shia population. And the Arabs, they intermarried. There was hardly any difference in Syria that I observed. In Pakistan, my country of origin, Shias and Sunnis coexist with each other. Of course, at the religious festival of Ashura, commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, feelings run high, but that's for a few days. I think that this resurgence of Sunni Shia violence in Iraq is because Iraq, unfortunately, is going through a very difficult period, a civil war almost, a fragmentation. And whenever there is fragmentation and instability, people revert back to their original sectarian beliefs, and it comes out us versus them, and that's what's happening in certain parts of the Muslim world.
Okay, but I'd like to ask the question again. Where are the moderate Islamic voices in the world who should be saying enough is enough of this?
Well, I think there are some voices. Maybe we don't hear about them so much, or maybe the media does not portray them very much, disseminate them so much. I agree with you that more needs to be done, but certainly you might have seen and heard that immediately after the bombing of the Askari Mosque in Samarra, the Shias and the Sunnis banded together. There were demonstrations. They said, we are Iraqis first and Shias and Sunnis later. That was helpful. This is also happening in some other places. But currently, the main sectarian writing and trouble is in Iraq. And we all know what is happening in Iraq today.
In your view, is the Bush administration operating under a misconception that the United States would win or would have won the hearts and minds of Muslims by pouring its tens of billions of dollars to reconstruct Iraq and pushing Western-style democracy in both Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yes, it seems that both these preconceptions were wrong. The history of Iraq was probably not kept in mind when the planning was taking place. The reconstruction was a very good idea, but the State Department was not allowed, its plan was not allowed to be implemented. Instead, an alternative plan was brought about, which has hardly been implemented. There is less electricity in Iraq today than under Saddam Hussein. All the other indices are negative. So there is the common Iraqi says, what have we gained? We were better off in Saddam's period. There are people saying this openly. So yes, that's a great failure. And secondly, I don't think that you can impose any system unless the people are ready for it. And anything that comes, even with the best of intentions, which is very good, which democracy is, we know it is, but the way it was projected and the way it was done in Iraq showed that it was an imposed system of government and that the Americans were there to stay. And this has led to a tremendous feeling of anti-Americanism in Iraq. The U.S. has to reassure the Islamic world that it would get a fair shake from the U.S., that the U.S. would be even-handed and would not allow realpolitik always to rule its foreign policy decisions. If there are some indications along these lines where the Israeli-Palestinian issue, Kashmir, Chechnya, these are the major issues, the U.S. starts becoming proactive on them, about them, I think there is every chance that the U.S. and the Islamic world can have a very beneficial relationship.
Ambassador S. Azmat Hassan, thank you for joining us, taking the time to join us, and assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you.
Does Western foreign policy bear any responsibility for the violence in the Middle East? Email us at radio@marynoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. You can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.